Perhaps I can best illustrate what I mean with the help of a short story. In the course of my life, I have written only 6 or 7 short stories, though I have had ideas for many more. And the short story to which I refer has not actually been written down. The idea of it came to me a few weeks ago as a result of the sightseeing Bassano City and I had been doing in Pisa in the course of our latest journey to Il Convento. As you know, sightseeing can be quite tiring, especially when one is getting on in years. And I think the idea of the story must have come to me as a result of the feeling of tiredness I experienced one day after we had visited the National Museum of St. Matthew, the Cathedral and Baptistry, the Leaning Tower, the Museum of the Sinopius, and several churches. The story began with 2 people coming to Italy on a sort of cultural tour. I imagined them visiting all the famous Italian cities and seeing the great churches and palaces, the museums and art galleries, much as I had done in 1966. One day, they happened to find themselves inside a particularly fine cathedral, and this is where the story really begins. Equipped with the usual crucifixions, Madonnas, both with and without child, Annunciations, saints and martyrs, being grilled, beheaded, sawn in two, broken on the wheel, shot full of arrows, torn with pincers, skinned alive, etc. Nativities, ascensions, assumptions, and last judgments, together with sundry cherubs and putti. Since the place is so vast and there is so much to see, the 2 friends spend several hours looking round the cathedral. Moreover, they are so interested in all the paintings and sculptures, which are of excellent quality, that they fail to notice that the place has gradually emptied and that the sacristan, thinking that everybody has left, has locked the massive bronze doors for the night. The younger of the 2 friends therefore goes in search of a side entrance that might still be open, while his older companion, feeling in need of a rest, sits down on a bench at the foot of one of the enormous Gothic pillars of the nave. By that time, it is practically dark. And he has not been sitting there for more than a few minutes when he hears a confused sound of footsteps and voices. It is almost as though a party of sightseers had entered the cathedral. But it is not a party of sightseers. On lifting his head, he sees in the dim light that now pervades the whole building an extraordinary sight. The sculpted and painted figures at which he and his friend had gazed so intensely only a short while ago are now stepping down from their marble pedestals and out of their carved and gilded frames onto the floor of the cathedral. There are hundreds of them, and after a momentary pause, some of them seem to have started moving down the aisle in his direction. The sound of footsteps and voices grows gradually louder as they approach. What followed was the main part of the story, and was to have taken up the greatest amount of space. But since I have not worked it out in detail, I can give you only a rough sketch of what happened. No doubt this will be enough for my present purpose. The idea was that once they had stepped down from their pedestals and out of their picture frames, the figures should all start behaving in a way that was not completely in accordance with their official character, so to speak. They were off duty now that the cathedral was closed and were free to behave as they liked. So Christ stretches his arms and says he's glad to get down from that crucifix for a few hours, while the Virgin Mary complains that the child gets heavier every day. She does not know how much longer she'll be able to stand there holding him. As for the child himself, he is playing with some of the more mischievous looking putti. And they are actually trying to use one of the cherubs, who is of course all head and wings, as a football. The Archangel Michael is also there. He lays aside his sword and his scales, takes off his shining armour, and starts doing press-ups in the middle of the nave. God the Father then comes along, having stepped down out of an enormous fresco of the Last Judgment. He is rather worried and mutters into his beard, saying that he's fed up with judging people, and in any case, thinks he has made quite a few mistakes. As if to confirm his suspicions, a crowd of figures out of the same fresco surround him and indignantly complain about the treatment they have received. Some of those who have been sent to heaven complain that it is a dull and boring place and ask to be sent somewhere more interesting, while some of those who have been sent to hell complain that the devils do not give them any attention. They could stand anything except that, they say. Even poor old St. Jerome is there. His back is stiff with spending so many hours at his desk, and he's glad to have respite from the endless work of translation. As for the lion, having woken up, shaken his hide, and followed St. Jerome out of the picture frame, he takes a leisurely stroll down the aisle, pausing to rub himself against the legs of various saints and martyrs, all of whom have something to contribute to the proceedings. St. John the Baptist remarks that it is nice to have his head back on again, while a female saint whose name I have forgotten makes a similar remark about her breasts. St. Lawrence hopes that nobody will mind him mentioning the fact that his gridiron is in need of repair. St. Agnes confesses to St. Mary Magdalene that she's tired of looking after all those lambs, while St. Mary Magdalene confides to St. Agnes that she thinks hair shirts don't really suit her anymore. Salome, who is of course neither a saint nor a martyr, asks her mother whether she ought not to learn a new dance, since Herod seems to be getting tired of the old one after all these years. How the story developed from that point onwards, I found it difficult to decide. Perhaps the complaints that the figures from the Last Judgment make to God the Father become so loud that the elder of the two friends, sitting there on his bench in the nave, gives a start, rubs his eyes, and finds that the sculpted and painted figures have returned to their pedestals and picture frames, and that the place is again practically dark. Or perhaps the figures suddenly all become aware of his presence and make a concerted rush at him, or try to drag him up onto a pedestal or into a picture frame. Anyway, it has all been a dream, and he is now awake. His young friend is standing beside him, shaking him vigorously by the shoulder. He has found a side entrance still unlocked, he says, and they must hurry, or it will be too late. Thus, the short story ends. It is not, of course, a very original story. I have read one novel and at least two short stories in which the statues in a museum all come to life and have various adventures, and these may well have influenced me. Moreover, to make one's principal character undergo some highly unusual experience, which in the end turns out to have been a dream, is a rather hackneyed device. Nevertheless, I hope that despite its shortcomings, this latest short story of mine has been able to illustrate the point that images are not such fixed and definite things as one might have thought, and that their significance can change.